Are you struggling with weight loss? Scared of getting the shot? Golo is a better way to lose weight. No prescriptions or insurance required. Just take one Release supplement with each meal and follow the Golo for Life plan. Golo's Release contains 7 natural plants and 3 key minerals to target body fat and combat the stress of dieting. Golo is clinically proven to work and safely and effectively controls sugar cravings and hunger while minimizing muscle loss, so you feel good and inspired to reach your goal weight. Stop going with the latest fad starvation diet. Stop depleting yourself and robbing your body of energy. Start living your best life today. Golo is effective and affordable, so before you consider drastic measures like the fad diets and new weight loss injections with potentially dangerous side effects, including significant muscle loss, learn more about Golo at Golo.com. Again, that's Golo.com. Join the 5 million who have already made the switch to Golo today. Visit Golo.com. That's Golo.com.
Hey guys, thanks for joining us for another episode of TFL Talking Trucks. And today I've got the man, the myth, the legend, the managing editor of TFL Truck, Andre, with me as always.
Thank you, Roman. That's quite an introduction. But Roman, let me ask you something. Do you have any regrets, like things you've... No, don't answer that.
I should have brushed my teeth this morning before doing this podcast like that. Yes, no. I regret that. Sorry.
I'll just talk sideways, Andre.
No, that's not what I mean. We're talking about missed opportunities for trucks. And we're going to kind of go down a list that we found. You know, we think... We looked at the industry, right?
Yeah.
And we said, you know, why aren't manufacturers doing this?
Yeah. And
regrets.
Let's just get right into it. Why leave you guys hanging? And the first one we figured out kind of a bad way because when When Ford unveiled the latest and greatest Maverick, right? They said that you can finally get the all-wheel drive with the hybrid.
Yes, everybody rejoiced. I rejoiced. You rejoiced.
Woo-hoo, there was much rejoicing in the land because now all of us cold weather types and all of us who like to go off-road,
yes.
Hold on to that thought, can now get good fuel economy. So we immediately jumped on the configurator. We called our local dealer and said, yes. We want to get the new Maverick with the hybrid and the all-wheel drive, so let's go configure one. And that's when the brakes came to a screeching halt.
We wanted maximum towing.
Yes,
which we got,
which we
could get.
Yeah, that's so, a whole. That's a 4,000.
4,000 pounds for a tiny truck. It's okay.
I know.
But then we wanted FX4 package, right? Because that's the Ford's more off-roady version. There is one right here. I'm standing next to it. If you're watching on the TFL Talk channel, there is a Maverick 2025. FX4, but it's not a hybrid.
Then something weird happened. So we clicked the FX4 package, and guess what? We were looking at the configurator because we were about to like say, okay, how much does this cost? And the configurator had automatically switched from the hybrid to the standard
2-liter turbo.
And we're like, what's going on there? And we said, well, how about if we try a Tremor? So we clicked the Tremor. We clicked the hybrid option, and guess what?
It doesn't
let you do it.
Yeah.
Because, and this is the missed opportunity for it, because of what, Andre?
Well, because Ford is not offering any off-road version, specific off-road version of the Maverick with a hybrid. And I don't know exact reasoning for this, because I talked to the engineers at Ford when I was there at the event. They said they beefed up the CVT in the hybrid. It does have an electronically controlled, continuously variable transmission.
Look, Subaru has built an entire empire out of taking CVT vehicles off-road.
Wilderness.
Yes.
Many models. Yes. So it's still a puzzle. But I think it is a missed opportunity because, maybe it's still coming. Maybe we need to wait a year.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, and you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your vehicle. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a, will you take a check, excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your vehicle, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your vehicle hassle-free and fast, go to tfltruck.com and click Sell Your Truck in the navigation menu. Or click on the High Road ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. High Road makes it easy, and we like easy.
Just, you know, what? Ford, just give the people what they want, because here's the problem with that theory, right? You can order your truck now with what you want on it, or you could be disappointed like we were. Mm-hmm. We still got the truck because it's such a big improvement.
But, so we ordered one for the company.
Yeah, we ordered one for the company, which isn't coming until what, end of the year?
Later this year, yeah.
But if you really do want to go off-road and you want a small truck, you know, there are a lot of mid-sized trucks that offer off-road packages, and Toyota offers a hybrid, you know, in all of their vehicles now for the most part, that, you know, supposedly gets you better fuel economy.
F-150 hybrid can be an FX4.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, but I'm saying what ends up happening is you end up just making your customers go to different brands or look at different options when you should be able to get one shop stopping in one place. And I don't understand the rationale behind it, because look, you may be saying, this is a first world problem, Roman. Why are you complaining about this? And the issue is, if you can't get the FX4 package, you can't get the off-road tires, you can't get the skid plates, right? And it makes
you want tow hooks.
Or tow hooks, recovery points, which is huge for us because we've got some serious off-roading here. And it makes you wonder, is this thing even capable of going off-road? I don't know. And I'm worried about it because I want to take it off-road. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the reason we got the off-road package. I mean, we got the all-wheel drive, so we could go off-roading with it. Obviously, you could also use it in the snow and such. But for us, it's about going off-road. And now I'm like, can we even take it off-road?
We will, and we'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll be out. The guinea pigs as always.
Yes.
I shouldn't say that. If Ford's listening to this, they may be reminded of what happened with our Tacoma when we took it off-road. Ouch, yeah.
Please. I hope nobody at Ford is watching this.
Hey, and speaking of which, this isn't a rant, but this is just an observation.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest video this week was when Whistling Diesel took the Cybertruck, and I think he called it reliability testing, or what does he call it? What's the thing he calls it?
Yeah, like durability testing.
Durability testing, right?
Yeah.
That's not durability testing, what he's doing.
What is it?
Because, well, that's autotainment.
Autotainment.
That's a word I think is a proper fit for what he's doing.
It is entertaining.
It is.
But he's basically destroying vehicles.
Yeah, I mean, if you were mean, you could call it destruction porn. But let's be generous and call it autotainment, because there's this big controversy of whether, you know, the subframe cracked or broke on the Cybertruck, and now everybody's analyzing it and saying it shouldn't happen. But guys, if you really wanted to see if F-150 is stronger than a Cybertruck, you know, you don't drop it on a concrete pad. You don't yank on a chain on a chain to get it out. This is autotainment. This is not testing, right? What we are doing is actually testing. We're using the truck as intended, and you know.
Or sometimes we push the limits too. We went to a sled pull.
Yes.
Right, with our Cybertruck, so we pushed the limits, but. You know, I think when you start dropping it from, you know, 5 feet in the air or jumping it 20 feet in the air, then anything can happen, really.
Yeah, I don't think that you're creating a lot of autotainment. I don't think you're creating anything.
And
that,
it works
that,
for him.
Yeah, no, No, it's entertaining.
Yeah.
But I don't think that this is something that we would have a serious discussion about, whether the subframe on a Tesla is strong enough, just because, you know, it cracked while he was... I dare I even say testing. I would just say torturing it. It's just torturing it at this point. Anyway.
There's one other thing on the Maverick.
Yes, keep going.
Before we move on to the next, because we do have, 11 or 12 items to
We do. We got a lot to go about. Through.
I want to talk about Maverick price for a second.
Okay.
Oh, because it increased.
20%-ish?
It increased. It first arrived on the scene at $19,995, in 2022.
Two-wheel drive.
Front-wheel drive hybrid was... But that's $19,995 plus destination, which was $15,95.
Which is also crazy.
Which is a high destination charge, but it is built in Mexico, right?
Yeah, but BMW does like $1,100 or $1,200, and it's built in Germany.
Yes.
I mean, if you were looking at that logically,
yes.
Then it would definitely cost more to ship a vehicle from Germany to your dealer.
Than Mexico?
Yeah.
So anyways, but now the Maverick front-wheel drive hybrid starts at $26,000.
Plus destination.
Plus destination. Yeah. So now... So now it's almost, what, $6,000 more?
Whoa.
Yes.
So ours was, how much was ours?
So we configured the cheap, slightly different one.
Yeah, so we started, let's talk about that. That's interesting. So me and Andre had a long, rousing discussion.
We were heated.
It was a heated discussion because you wanted to get the XL work truck.
Yes, I wanted to get a hybrid all-wheel drive XL with Steelies.
How much was that?
That was like 31-ish,
okay.
$30,000. Oh, but I wanted a towing pack also.
Yeah, so that was expensive, actually.
Which is like... Yeah, like $800 or something.
Yeah. It's your brake controller, right?
So brake controller, yeah. Yes. So, and then you said, and you and Tommy had a different idea.
Well, I was looking at the interior of the XL, and it's a little dour, you know? And I mean, one of the things that we try to do is try to buy the version of the truck. I know you guys all want the cheap version, but if people are buying the cheap version, the dealership would be loaded with the base version, and it's not. And I think what happens is, when you comment on a video, it's nice to be hateful of the high price, so it's great to be kind of like promoting the base version. But the fact remains, when you actually go and buy the truck, or when fleets buy the truck, at some point people want the niceties, and they roll it into their financing. And so when you're given the opportunity of a steely base truck versus one that has some nice things like heated seats.
Sure.
Right. Or a sunroof or whatever you love.
Or multiple colors on the interior.
Yeah. Then you go up to the nicer one. And so we decided to take it up a step and get the mid-grade, right? That's why like the
XLT.
It's not the mid-grade, but not the base one. One down, one up from the base. And that's why the Japanese always do three grades, because most people choose the middle grade. And so I have to be a little bit of a businessman here, Andre.
What?
I also have to think about resale because, you know, let's face it, we will hold on to this. But then we will sell it and move on to the next great thing. And so I just felt like it'd be hard to sell an XL. Plus, I think for, what, $2,000 more, the XLT gets you a much nicer interior, more colors. It's just, you know, nicer place to be.
And you're wrong.
Okay, fair. Look, I love the Steelies. I don't mind the Steelies.
Can I buy the Steelies separately and put them on our XLT?
With your money or the company money?
My money.
Well, sure. That's okay. Fine. You can buy whatever you want with your money and put it on the XLT. Okay.
All right.
If you want to buy a camper with your money, feel free.
Yeah. You know what? GFC builds campers for Mavericks.
I know.
Little tiny ones.
We'll get to that. That's also a missed opportunity.
Okay.
That's right. Coming up.
So let's move on to the next manufacturer. We spend enough time here.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're talking about compact trucks. And of course, the only competing truck with the Maverick is the Santa Cruz.
Bam. Here it is. And they redesigned it for 2025, right?
Yes, but they didn't do the obvious, which is add the hybrid version, which you can get in the car that the truck is based on.
Tucson.
Yes.
Tucson and hybrid, and plug-in hybrid exists.
But not in the Santa Cruz.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's interesting that this has been an interesting kind of study in what people want. Because when they both came out about the same time, and the Santa Cruz was, I talked to the designer, it was designed in California to be kind of a lifestyle vehicle, right?
So, yeah, surfboard off
the
back.
Yeah, you throw your surfboard on the back, you take it to the beach, you know. Yeah. You open up a Celsius, you go at the waves.
Well, Santa Cruz is a city in California.
Yeah, yeah. And the Maverick was designed to be more of a work truck or a truck, right? So when Ford came out, you could like add options by laser printing different things that you could put in the bed, you know, dividers.
You could build by yourself. They have pigtails where you can plug in lights, right? All that stuff.
And let me ask you, so which one sells more?
Maverick by a huge number.
Okay.
Okay. So, but Ford leans into their truck heritage, right? That's where they lean into.
The best-selling truck. The best-selling vehicle in
built
America.
Built Ford tough.
For the last 3,000 years.
Yes. Hyundai cannot lean into their truck heritage because they don't have a lot of truck heritage. But they can lean into design. They can lean, you know, a Santa Cruz, it's, you forget you're driving a pickup because it drives like a crossover. You know, you get in it, it's very comfortable. It's very kind of light on its feet.
Well, I would also say the bed is about as small
as it can be.
Yeah, I think a better word for it would be what the Australians call a ute.
A little ute.
It's a little ute. It's a ute.
Yes.
Good day, mate. Yeah. Bring the ute by. I can't do an Australian accent. Anyway, it's more of a ute, right? Because it's got a 4-foot bed. So you could put a bike in there, but you're probably not going to be hauling around a lot of hay or wood or whatever, you know, that you might do if you were ranching.
Yes. So, and adding a hybrid I don't want to say it would be kind of simple for them, because nothing is simple, really. But they have that technology. It exists for them already. So because Nathan owned a Santa Cruz, and he was pretty happy with his Santa Cruz, but he always told me, you know, he got about 25 mpg.
Yeah.
So, but the whole point of a small vehicle is really great efficiency, and 25 is not really, really spectacular.
Well, there are two powertrains, and one of them comes with a traditional, you know, traditional automatic transmission, and the other one comes with a dual clutch. I do not know why you would stick a dual clutch in a truck. I mean, dual clutches were designed for track work. It seems like the last thing you'd want to put in a truck is dual clutch, and yet this is maybe speaks to the fact that Hyundai is kind of learning about trucks, and so some product planner saw that they had these powertrain options, and they thought, well, let's stick this one into this truck, and it doesn't really work off-road. Ours overheated when we took it off-road, and I'm not getting down on the truck. I think it's a really great little, like I said, the biggest, I think, issue, and the reason that the Maverick outsells it, 10-1 or something, is price. It's an expensive...
Yeah, it's a little bit more premium
and
in price, specifically.
Yeah, exactly. It's a lifestyle vehicle.
But I think if they increase the efficiency, they could sell more, and it's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, just put the hybrid... You could have the first plug-in hybrid compact truck, right? And that's a commercial right there. Anyway, let's keep going. What's number three on your list, Andre?
Toyota Tundra... Hybrid.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. And specifically not the hybrid.
So you've got not the hybrid. I thought we were talking about the hybrid.
Well, not just the fact that it's a hybrid, but the fact that it doesn't have really powerful onboard inverter system.
So you've got this big battery. Relatively speaking. It's not a big battery we're compared to a Cybertruck, okay, but it's a big battery. And you could take that power in that battery and you could use it to do really useful things. Like power more than your toothbrush, your electric toothbrush, right? Because most of those trucks, we had that experience.
Yeah.
We have a trail, we call it Cliffhanger 1.0, and it's overgrown. And so before I knew about, you know, all this electric stuff, which I'm still very vague on, but I can tell you my experience. I thought to myself, you know, this thing is pinstriping our cars. Let's take a bush trimmer, right? Mm-hmm. And let's take it, one of those... trimmers that kind of has blades that kind of go back and forth.
Yeah, like a scissor, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And let's take it and let's just do some trail maintenance.
Sure, and trim it.
And you know, I thought, let's take a truck and we'll just plug it into the truck and go for it. And this was like a 400 amp, I think, right? That was typical back then.
400 watt, yeah.
400 watt, sorry. See, I'm not great at this. 400 watt. So we took it out there, I plugged it in, and the thing went...
And it barely started.
It barely started. But this is not a problem when you have... Whatever it is it a 1.5 kilowatt hour battery? How big is a Toyota?
1.87. Close. So almost 2 kilowatt hours.
No cigar, Roman. Yes.
Almost 2 kilowatt hours. And Ford F-150 Hybrid offers 7.2 kilowatt or 7,200 watt system with 240 volts in it, which you could weld off of. You could trim whatever trees you want using that.
Can you hold down the Ford for a second while I go turn the air conditioning on in here? Because I'm dying. Okay. All right. I'll be right back, guys. I assume the show will be better without me, so enjoy.
Wow. And I was wondering this. So Ford came out with the F-150 Hybrid in, 2021? And the big news, and I think they kind of cornered the market here, they put in this 7,200 watt inverter using also the 240 volt circuit, which means it's basically like a washer dryer or a dryer circuit in your laundry room. And it expands your horizon. You may not use it every day, but that's what the truck is about. It's about capability, ultimate capability. So if there is a power outage, you could power some accessories or some utility items in your house. You could run your fridge on it. You could run lights, maybe air conditioning. You could run air conditioning off of this. And then Toyota Tundra came out with a hybrid and no such system. I talked to Toyota engineers.
Yes, I'm back.
And I asked, why not? And they said that they didn't see like a value proposition that they could bring to the table. Because of course you only have limited resources when developing a truck, and they said, well, our customers could buy a gasoline powered generator, put it in the bed, and for about $1,000 they can match whatever capacity they want. I question that, Roman, because remember we had a Honda generator, Yes. But that was 7.2 kilowatts.
I remember.
But it weighed 300 pounds.
Yeah.
And it cost about $5,000.
I mean, I question it now because of all the stuff that's happening, like in Texas, where people are losing power.
In Florida.
In Florida because of hurricanes or, you know, the grid goes off. And with, you know, an inverter, you could easily plug in the most important things in your house. Let's say, well, for me, it'd be the refrigerator, but for others, it might be, you know, the air conditioner. I don't know, whatever, you know, whatever you would want to power, and you would not necessarily be able to power your entire house, but you could certainly keep the fridge running and keep the air conditioner going on some other things, depending on, you know, how much power the truck's putting out. And Ford proved that, right? There was that famous incident where Ford...
Well, they ran a wedding off of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, in any, in variety of circumstances, you know... I see a lot of people now using F-150 hybrids with the system, like they're towing little food trailers.
Yeah.
You know, where they cook, you know, they sell food.
Yeah, you could power food trucks.
Yeah, little food trucks you could power every single time.
So here, I got a question for you, Andre. Right. And I don't know the answer, but I'm gonna ask this. You know, with the Tundra engine recall, right, we're looking at 100,000 engines that would be not just part of the engine, but the whole engine. It's going to cost Toyota probably billions to do this.
Yes.
Is someone going to have to fall on their sword for this? I mean, that just feels like somebody's going to have to take the fall. And if so, who would that be?
It's a big problem, yes. Somebody has to do it.
I think somebody's going to have to. I don't want to like point fingers at people, but the obvious person would be the chief engineer. And, you know, that would be very sad because we like Mike. And we hope that that's not something that is going to happen. But in that kind of a situation, and it could be well beyond any chief engineer's fault, right? This could be something that was just done because of that. Go ahead.
Well, I like the chief engineer position itself.
Yeah.
Because and that's why we interview mostly chief engineers is because they're kind of the focus point of the vehicle, right? Because they're getting requirements from marketing, from product planning, from engineering, you know, requirements, and they're trying to reconcile all of it, and kind of they're holding the keys, right, to the kingdom, so to speak. That's why we love interviewing them and learning a lot about the vehicle. But you're also you take all, you know, you get all the praise and all the blame.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right there.
And let's face it, it kind of started way back when we were at the launch of the Tundra and. Specifically like the TRD Pro, didn't have recovery points,
yes.
Right? And everybody at that press conference wasn't focusing on the fuel economy
or the shocks
or all the cool stuff that they had done to the truck. They were all like, why doesn't it have recovery points?
The focus was wrong.
And so something that simple, right? When you build an off-road truck without one of the key features that most competitors have, then becomes the focus as opposed to everything else. So whether it's, I wasn't in the meeting, obviously, where Toyota decided not to put in recovery points. I'm sure they're smart enough to know that most trucks, especially off-road trucks, have recovery points. But you know, the reason that they gave was because it had these active aero shutters.
And also like pedestrian safety was another reason.
But there are other vehicles that have those and have recovery points. And then the aftermarket, of course, sorted itself out. But I think that was the initial missed opportunity with the Tundra, and so it kind of goes back to like what was going on at Toyota at that time that they decided to make decisions that in the long run I think negatively impacted the truck. Be that, you know, with the engine or be that with the recovery points, it feels like maybe they decided that they were going to do a little bit of cost cutting, and this is not me having any insider information. This is just me kind of spitballing it, but maybe that decision has come back to haunt them.
Let's talk about another manufacturer that's not building something that others are building.
Yeah, what is that on the screen there? That looks pretty badass.
So I'm showing a SEMA concept truck, which Chevy called the Beast. And now we're talking about Chevrolet and GM, General Motors.
I remember that. I saw it at SEMA.
Yeah. And specifically, this basically is an off-road vehicle, but this is a wild version of it. But it has something interesting. It has very sophisticated suspension and a supercharged V8, Roman, underneath the hood.
Yeah, so what you're getting at is with Ford building the Raptor and with Ram building the TRX, where was the Chevy version of that? Where was the Chevy Raptor or whatever you'd want to call it? I guess Chevy would say it's the Hummer
EV truck.
EV truck, but I don't think in people's minds it's comparable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think the guys who love pistons and gas and, you know, big old loud V8s don't equate the Hummer EV with the Raptor or the TRX. I just don't think. And the Gals.
And so they've built the ZR2, yeah. Right? They've had it for several years. ZR2 is a great vehicle, and also the 84X GMC, right?
Yep.
But they have their place, right? Because they're not as wide as the Raptor or TRX. They have some capability where the Raptor and TRX may not fit through certain areas like trees and forests, and maybe a ZR2 could. But the whole thing about this Halo off-road vehicle is wide stance, big giant suspension travel, big shocks, and big power, right?
Or active shocks.
Yeah. And also a huge amount of power. And I don't know why they built this concept, because they're just teasing us at this point. Because nothing came of nothing.
I mean, the closest they got was a ZR2, but the problem is it wasn't any wider. The shocks, I mean, they did have the DSSV spool valve shocks, which were, you know, class leading, but they didn't have the wide body. And it just felt like it was, you know, the competitor to, let's say, the Tremor version of the F-150.
Rather than the Raptor.
Yeah.
And look at this, supercharged V8 in this concept as well. And they did a Cadillac Escalade supercharged. So we know that engine went through, you know, all the testing. Anyways, so where should we go from here?
I think we should go between... let's just continue in the same theme, because the next one we might have a rousing discussion on about the fact that I feel like the new Ram RHO, which I believe stands for really high output,
yes,
is not a good follow-up to the TRX. Why am I saying that, Andre? Oof.
Well, I think you're pointing at the lack of V8, because TRX came with, you know, a supercharged, basically a Hellcat engine, supercharged 6.2 liter V8.
I think it created the Raptor R. I think without
It pushed forward into the Raptor R.
Yeah, without the TRX, there'd be no Raptor
territory.
R.
Yeah. And now the V8 engines are being discontinued in Stellantis and Ram. And this one, the RHO, which we're yet to drive, actually, because no journalist has driven one yet, has a high output Hurricane 3 liter twin turbo.
Right, but it doesn't come close to 700 horsepower.
No.
We're looking at more like
540.
Yeah, in the 500 horsepower range. And the problem with that is it's hard to go back as opposed to going forward. And especially now when electric trucks are becoming so powerful, not just the Hummer EV, but the Rivian, right? We're looking at 1,000 horsepower being, not, I would say, commonplace, but, you know, with the Cyber Truck, the beast version of that, also, what, 800 horsepower?
800 plus. Yeah.
1,000 in the Rivian. It just kind of feels like weak sauce to come out with this, you know, top dog RHO, which really isn't all that high output compared to the TRX. And I know that maybe they're saving something, you know, they're keeping their powder dry, and there could be something coming that we don't know about.
Sure.
But it seems, like I said, like a half measure as opposed to... as a fan of Ram and as a fan of Mopar, it doesn't get my wheel spinning.
Your blood boiling?
Yeah, no.
Okay,
I mean, well, I could be wrong. Well, I could be wrong.
Well, let's see. What if we drive it?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm gonna reserve judgment. And the fact that's not disputable is that it's a lot cheaper than a TRX.
Yeah.
So how much?
It's gonna start with just under 70 grand, but of course with destination charges, it will be what, 71 ish and plus. But for 71 grand, dude, you can't even touch a Raptor for that money. Raptor started about 80. Then TRX started at, you know, 80, 90, 100.
Dude, it went to, I think, 119 before they killed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I'm still seeing used TRXs, depending on, you know, what condition they're in, but they're still holding their value. So we'll see. But
the main thing is sound. I mean, power is one thing.
Yeah, that's a good point, Andre.
But we've driven Hurricane engines in their other Rams, 1500 trucks for 2025, and they're amazingly smooth and powerful. But they're quiet. They actually have almost no sound. That's how smooth and powerful they are.
And it's been delayed too, which doesn't help.
Yeah, I mean, we still don't have an event. We still are waiting for the RHO.
You know, it's a weird thing, this. Ever since COVID, in the past, there seemed to be this notion that you underpromise and you overperform, right? So I remember we would go to these programs and they would surprise us. Like I remember when the Hellcats came out, right? That was just mind-blowing. And now we seem to have gone in the exact opposite direction, which is overpromise and underperform. And that takes shape in a lot of different ways.
Well, Tesla is great at that.
Yeah, Tesla is. I mean, that's one of the reasons that Whistling Diesel was so successful with that video is because he basically called out Musk's overpromising, right?
Yes.
Musk called this truck the greatest thing since sliced bread, and it kind of has proven to be a very good electric truck, but certainly not the, let's call it, zombie apocalypse vehicle that he made it out to be, right? When that first thing came out, you know, when he threw that big ball at the window.
It broke the window.
Yeah. When he said that, you know, it would take a bullet, then, yeah, it depends.
But it depends on the type of gun and the type of bullet.
And the velocity. And then, you know, when he said it would out to an F-150, and then he had that thing where it would out-accelerate a Porsche. And there was just these series of videos calling him out on that, proving him point after point after point that that's not true. And with our Cybertruck, I'm still waiting for full self-driving.
Still doesn't exist.
Yeah, we got emails saying, hey, do you want to get it early? And we were like, you were like an hour into it, right, when order books opened up.
Yeah.
So we were there early, and they said, do you want to get it early? And we said, can we just wait for the regular one? And they said, well, you can, but you may not get it for another year. So we said, screw it. And they promised us two things, none of which have come true. They promised us, first, full self-driving doesn't exist. They did finally add the lockers, so thank you very much, the off-road mode stuff.
But it didn't come initially with that.
But when it did come, it was worth it, so I don't want to be down on that. And then the inverter at my house. So we installed the inverter because one of the promises of the Foundation Series is that you can be able to basically power your house using the truck's battery.
Yes.
But now I got an email from Tesla saying, oh, sorry, XL, which is not maybe their fault, but maybe they should have worked this out, right? This is like not my problem kind of a business issue. It's Tesla's problem. Maybe they shouldn't be promising that it can power my house. And then XL comes back to them and says, hey, for whatever reason, we're not going to allow that to happen. Maybe they should have had that arranged ahead of time before promising it. So
XL is our local power company.
Yeah, XL is our local power company, yeah. So I don't know what you know, we paid for the installation of the inverter. It's at my house.
And it wasn't cheap. I mean, it wasn't like...
No.
It was several thousand dollars,
yeah,
right?
The installation wasn't cheap. And then we get this email from Tesla saying, oh, we're working with XL. They're still having some... I don't know what the issue is. We'll give you some free supercharging. And frankly, I've got a charger at my house. I really don't need supercharging unless, you know, we're cross-country, the truck, which we haven't done in a while because we've been using it, you know, as a very... It's actually a very good...
What, runabout?
Yeah. So let's talk about that before we go on to the next five. I just want to say that I watched that Whistling Diesel video, and now the storyline of the Cybertruck is it's kind of become a pincushion for everybody who hates Tesla. And I got to say, the truck is actually pretty darn good as an electric truck. In some ways, I would say it's better.
I wouldn't say truck specifically, but a vehicle.
I would say truck, actually. Okay. I think, you know, we move furniture with it. We've towed with it, not long distance, but certainly, you know, we've towed around town with it. We've tortured it. Yes, we've taken,
tortured towed with it.
Yes, we've yes, we, you know, we just have this new test we're calling the TFL Toaster.
Yes,
where we take a truck and we take it up a very steep grade, towing maximum.
It's at 95 degrees plus ambient temperature.
Yeah, so it's not the eye gauntlet. It's not a highway test. It's just a straight up. It's super hot. We're super loaded, and we're going up a mountain test.
Yeah.
And we've tested now. The Ford failed it. The Silverado failed it. And we just tested the Ram, and that also failed it. And the Cybertruck was the only one that didn't fail it. So there is, I think, a lot to like about that truck. And as any electric vehicle, it's just super easy to live with. It's a big truck, but because of four-wheel steering, it's easy to park.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've kind of made it interesting by wrapping it because I really didn't like the stainless steel look. So you could make it your own. I guess you could say that's a good thing if you want to spend a little bit more money on wrapping it.
Well, that's not free either. Yeah, that can cost a lot of money too.
And there are build quality issues, which Whistling Diesel pointed out. But, you know, once again, taking a pickaxe to a truck is not a test. It's like I said, it's autotainment. It's not something any truck would survive. So I actually like the Cybertruck. If, you know, given the choice of a number of trucks that we can drive, I would usually, for just around town, always pick the Cybertruck. I might, if it was between the Cybertruck and the Ranger Raptor, and these are very good problems to have, I understand that, I would probably take the Ranger Raptor just because it's smaller. But, you know, if I needed the room and if I had to go to the airport, I would take the Cybertruck just for the simple reason that you can shut that bed up, right, with the cover, and throw all your friends, which actually I did, all their stuff in the back and keep it dry when it's raining like it is today. How about you? What would you take? I should ask
Ranger Raptor versus Cybertruck?
No, out of all the trucks. So right now we have what?
We have a Cummins.
Yeah, let's talk about the trucks that we have in our fleet. We have a Cummins lifted.
Yes.
We have a Ranger Raptor.
Mm-hmm.
We have the Cybertruck. We have the new work truck, the Ram 1500. And so four trucks, they're sitting here in the garage, and you got to go get lunch. Which one are you going to take?
I'm going to jump into the Ranger Raptor. I fell in love with that truck. It's just fun. You know, it has that fun quality of speed.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to go fast, but when you do feel playful.
Oh, and we have your truck too, the Colorado.
The Colorado Trailblazer. Yeah. Still Ranger Raptor. Even though my truck, my Colorado Trailblazer, has a lot of power too, it doesn't match the power of the Ranger Raptor. I mean, the Ranger Raptor, you can accelerate and you get that little, you know, little tiny burble of the V6. It's not a V8, but still, it's kind of fun.
By the way, Andre bought a new truck.
And we are still.
You're gonna find out what that is if you want to.
This weekend.
Yeah, if this weekend, you're gonna find out what that is because I bet you, if I gave you 10 guesses, if I gave you 100 guesses, you would never probably get the truck. So if you want to see what that truck is, and you're listening to this podcast. That video will probably be up at the same time as this podcast if we can get it.
Approximately, yes. So oldtfl.com.
Head on over. Where, Andre?
Oldtfl.com. Because we have 8 channels and many websites, but all the information is right there.
Yeah, I still can't believe what you bought. And he bought it for the company, so it's not his personal vehicle.
Well, I had to convince you first.
You did convince me.
Yeah.
And now we're struggling to find out what color it should be and where to park it. That's all the clues I'm going to give you.
Okay.
But head on over to alltfl.com. I think we'll have that up this weekend. Yeah, that's all I'm going to say.
So that's, yeah.
All right, so okay, anyway, so I was just going to say, let me wrap up the Cybertruck discussion. It's just become a punching bag, a pincushion. Lewis Black did a video that's got millions of views.
Tucker
right?
did.
Tucker, another review, right? So Tucker takes this thing for a review, and the first thing he does is the guy who owns it gives him the bag, and he shows off all the guns he has. That's not a truck review. That's a political statement of, you know, and this is the heart of the problem with the Cybertruck, right? Nobody is actually reviewing it as a truck anymore. It's just become this political hot potato
that you could talk about or show. Yes.
Yeah, and so you know, it could be you could wear it as, I don't know, on your sleeve as showing off how green you are, or you could hate it to show off how much you hate the fact that these people, or you could drive it around because you think you're the coolest, right? It's become this like kind of almost douchey thing that kind of like the
original Hummer H2.
Yeah. You know, so you've got this truck that's supposedly fuel efficient and green, but in real life, it's probably anything but that. And it's just become a punching bag for all sorts of things. And I think in all of that, the actual usefulness of that truck has gotten lost. However, it is the best-selling electric truck in America.
As of right now, yes.
Yeah, it outsells the F-150 Lightning. It outsells Rivian. So
outsells Silverado EV.
Yeah, maybe through all that noise, people are buying it because the fundamentals of the thing, you know, are pretty good. It was funny because I think I was watching a truck review of it.
Yes.
I'm monopolizing the conversation.
That's okay.
No, go ahead.
Well, I did not watch the Tucker review,
mm-hmm.
But I want to say that, yes, even though they are selling some of the others right now, I think the latest data shows that. I think it's still a statement for those owners.
Hmm.
I don't think a lot of, like, you know, if you want to promote your business, let's say you have a successful small business. I've seen many Cybertrucks around Denver with business names on them, right? So if you have a successful business, you want to show off. Or you just are successful, period, and you just want to have a personal vehicle that you want to show off. I don't see a lot of just.
Well, you know, we had the first one here in Colorado, one of the first ones. Our CU football player.
Coach Prime.
No, his son.
Oh, yeah. Is it Shiloh or Shador?
Shador.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he wrapped, I guess he wrapped it in Bronco, not Bronco, in
gold and black.
Buffalo colors. Gold
CU
and black.
Buffalo colors.
So it does become kind of an extension of your personality.
Yeah, yeah. It does. Yeah.
So, like I was saying with this Tucker interview, I'm saying that with air quotes again. More autotainment. It was really, you'd think that because, you know, Tucker Carlson certainly comes from a very conservative point of view, that this guy who owns this Cybertruck would be like hating on it. But at the end of the day, if you watch the thing, the guy really kind of liked it. You know, he said, I need one truck, and he's got another one. And in the review, he says he's got another one, autotainment. But, you know, they load it up with dirt. They take it kind of waterfording. And I think Tucker was a little bit like taken aback just how much this guy actually likes the Cybertruck. And maybe that's because, of course, Mr. Musk has now seemed to have made a complete flip-flop going from varying. Because I'm saying that because I interviewed him.
Yeah.
And I remember he came to Boulder, and I've told this story before, but I'll just tell it quickly. He came to Boulder when the first Tesla shop opened up here in Boulder.
For the Roadster.
Yeah,
for the original Roadster.
For the Roadster, right? And yeah. I was there and I interviewed him. And I asked him, you know, why are you building electric cars? Because this was even before the Model S. And he said, well, because, you know, this is great for the environment and this is what, you know, we need to do to save the earth from burning, yada, yada, yada. You know where the rest of that goes. And he's completely kind of flipped up on that, right? He now has become a staunch conservative, which is odd because the majority of his customers are not conservative. So I don't know. It's a wacky world we live in. I'm kind of getting too close to the third rail of politics here. We try to stay out of that. But the Cybertruck has become political, so I think I'm fair to kind of wade into those waters because that's where the truck is. Shall we keep going, Andre?
All right, enough about Cybertruck.
Yes.
So Ram. Let's go back to Ram.
Okay.
And they do not sell a midsize or a compact truck.
What about the Dakota?
It doesn't exist.
I know.
It used to exist. You know what? Dakota was a great truck, but it was also kind of large.
It was a great truck, actually. It was weird. It was a five-cylinder.
Well, they had many versions. Right. The one
I reviewed was a five.
They had V8-powered Dakotas. Mm-hmm. They had, you know, any number of them.
Wasn't that the only mid-size V8?
No. Well, I think Chevy S10 or Chevy original Colorado had a small V8 option as well.
Okay.
But they have Ram and Stellantis have mid-size trucks like this Ram 1200. Across other markets, they sell them in South America, in Mexico. They sell them in other markets in Asia, some in Europe. Why are they missing the boat here in the United States?
The obvious answer is they don't want to compete with the Gladiator because it's under the same, you know, family brand.
Okay, but they have an ability to do a work truck, like a small work truck, to compete with the Ranger. Tacoma. I know it's a tough market, maybe.
Well, let's start with the fact that the Gladiators are crazy expensive.
Yes.
It is, I think it'd be fair to say, it is the most expensive midsize truck out there. Now the TRD Pro or Trail Hunter maybe.
Is getting up there, but still the Jeep.
But the Jeep, certainly. I remember the one I test drove with Nathan in Moab, which was a Mojave. I think that was 68, if I remember the.
And I think the latest, like, the last diesel Gladiators, they were just about 72,000.
So
they're really expensive.
So the missed opportunity is for Ram to bring in a Dakota or another version of whatever you want to call it, and make it the budget, you know, Stellantis midsize truck or a compact truck. Either way, I think both work because they also have compact trucks. I remember I was in Geneva where. They unveiled, I forget what that truck was called, but they have a little tiny mini truck that they also sell in Brazil and the rest of the world.
It's probably like
Fiat
Toro or Fiat.
Yeah, exactly. It's a Fiat.
It's a compact truck. Several different Fiats.
Yeah, because Stellantis owns Fiat.
Yeah.
And I just was scratching my head. I was looking at it, and it was this off-road little mini truck, you know, something like Suzuki might build to complement the Jimny. And I thought to myself, this would sell like hotcakes in America. And yet, no such luck. Hey, before I forget, could I just give you two quick other missed opportunities?
Yeah, sure.
Because these are on our list, but I'll forget about them.
Okay.
I had a long conversation with the head of PR at Toyota/Lexus.
Okay.
And I threw out this crazy idea. I said, why don't you build a Lexus version of the Tundra? And they looked at me like I was from the moon. like no one would buy a Lexus version of the Tundra. And I disagree. I think all those guys who take their wives, GX or LX in Texas, right, which is the biggest market. I'm not being stereotypical. It's the biggest market. One in four trucks, 25% of trucks are sold in Texas. And all those like rich ranchers who take their wives GX or take their own GX, once again, I don't want to be stereotypical, to the Lexus dealership. If there was a Lexus Tundra, whatever you want to call it, I think those things would fly off the shelves. I think it would become the most popular Lexus overnight and even outsell the RX, which is currently their best-selling vehicle. What do you think?
I'm with you on this. Specifically, when you were talking about this, you and I discussed this off camera. I think a GX, the new GX platform, could be a pickup.
Could be a pickup.
You know, right now, for example, they have a GX 550 over trail model, which is an off-roady.
Wouldn't it be cheaper just to rebrand a Tacoma as opposed to trying to actually re-engineer a GX into a pickup truck?
But they share the same frame.
True that, yeah.
The Tacoma, 4Runner, GX, Land Cruiser, they share the same frame. So it wouldn't be out of this world to say, you know, use the Tacoma frame, make it a little bit longer. And GX has this kind of bolt styling. It's squared off already. And I think I think it could be – and it doesn't matter if it costs $100,000. Let's say it costs $100,000. Here's what's happening. Grenadier Quartermaster is coming to market at like $90,000, $95,000, right? People are getting excited about it. If Mercedes built a G-Wagon pickup at $200,000, I think it would sell. I think there's still that premium market for really high-end trucks.
Isn't that kind of the Quartermaster, though? Isn't that a G-Wagon?
Kind of is.
Yeah. So we'll see how that does.
Ineos, it's kind of taking a little bit of that market.
All right. And the other one that I have that's not on this list is, I had this conversation with then the CEO of Volkswagen, and I said, bring the Amarok over. And he's like, oh, no, chicken tax, can't be done. And I'm like, oh, once again, overnight it would become your best-selling Volkswagen if they just took the Amarok and made it into... and built it here. You know, they keep building like what Volkswagen thinks is the vehicle that people want in Wolfsburg for Americans, but they don't understand that Americans just love pickup trucks. Like what's happened in America is that the sedan has become the SUV and the SUV is becoming the pickup truck as a family truckster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and I think you have a valid point. I mean, Lexus, I think, is missing the boat a little bit.
All right, should we keep going down the list? What's
where
next?
Are we at? We are Toyota.
Yeah.
We just talked about Lexus.
Yeah. Now, what's the Toyota missed opportunity?
Mini truck.
Yeah?
Mini truck. You went to Japan, and you saw a concept truck, which was this, which is a little EPU electric thing designed in California, of all places. And this could sell like hotcakes. It would challenge the Maverick, I think.
What is EPU? It's like electric pickup.
Electric pickup.
Yeah, yeah, EPU.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Why is there
yeah,
no...
Why even show it if they're going to kind of go back on it?
Yeah.
Look, it didn't have a midgate?
Yeah, it was designed in California. Yeah. It was really innovative and really cool. And it doesn't have to be electric, right? I mean, you know, Toyota's been teasing the Stout, or at least people out there have been teasing the Stout, and yet there is no Stout at your Toyota dealership that you could buy. And I think it would not be hard to see the success that Ford is having with the Maverick for Toyota and say, you know, that's a nice little warm pond that we want to go play in, Andre.
Yes. And it could look differently. I mean, they showed this officially. They also showed the little FJ Cruiser.
Like electric FJ, yeah.
This
is when Akio Toyota was still the president before he stepped down.
It looks amazing.
Yeah, it looks amazing. It looks just build it, Toyota. Stop hemming and hawing. I think compact trucks are where it's at right now. I'm not sure that people are as crazed about heavy duty trucks as they once were. At least most people. I mean, certainly people who use them as work tools are. But for a while there were a lot of people who were driving heavy duty trucks as kind of their everyday driver. And I think what happened was it's just a hard truck to live with, right? It's so big and so cumbersome and so expensive that it's a hard family truckster to have a HD truck.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are also price sensitive, right? So that's why I think Maverick was really important. And if they could keep a price of this pickup, little tiny pickup down, then they can be successful, I think.
Okay, what's next?
Ford.
Okay, what do we got for Ford?
So Ford, in 2017, right, they came out with the second generation of the Raptor.
Uh-huh.
And they went from the V8
yep.
in the first gen to all-turbo power, which was a twin-turbo V6. So I think they still are missing the boat on no V8 Raptor that's not a Raptor R.
So basically, instead of like doubling down on the twin turbo EcoBoost,
they could have offered more options
with the Coyote.
Yes, but they've been successful. I mean, I'm not gonna take away a lot from them. But once again, if you want a V8 Raptor, if you like that look, if you like wide suspension, and you don't have $115,000 on a Raptor R, maybe more than that with dealer markups, why couldn't you get a V8, like a little 5-liter?
You think it might be one of those cases where that's what people say they want, but when they really go to the dealership, you know, where the tire hits the road, then they'll not buy that. Because at the end of the day, the Coyote doesn't actually sell all that well in the F-150, right? I think it
but
accounts
Ford
for like,
is keeping
10,
it
like 10%.
Probably or about 10, yes.
Yeah, so it's not like it's a super hot selling engine. And so maybe doubling down on that or leaning into it might not be smart. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I know everybody in the comments will say, I'd love to have
X, right. Y, Z.
Yeah, but maybe when you saw the fuel economy, you might change your mind.
You know what? We tested a V8 Tremor.
Yeah.
So V8 is available in the F-150 Tremor. And it worked, actually was not about the same efficiency as the V6, maybe even more in some cases.
And to be fair, Ford does sell that in-house supercharger kit that you can put on a Coyote, which is, you know, amazing. And you get, what, like 760 horsepower, and they'll do it for 10K.
With warranty.
With the factory warranty. I mean, that's just mind-blowing.
Yeah.
So maybe that does exist. All right. How about the 392 Gladiator? Oh, I'm sorry. That doesn't exist.
No, it does not. And may not ever exist, right? Because the V8s are kind of going away in Stellantis land. And they did the 392 V8 Wrangler that was very expensive, but super, super popular.
Well, look, they took the Hellcat out of the Charger Challenger twins and they stuck it in the Ram 1500, called it a TRX.
Yes.
They already had the 392 in the Wrangler, which is basically
the same chassis
as the Gladiator. So why not offer it? Could it be like fuel economy, corporate fuel economy, cafe numbers? I mean, talk about supercharging, and that's a bad pun, supercharging Gladiator sales. But yeah, a 392 and a Gladiator, count me in, take my money.
Yeah, and it may never happen. So the information we have now is that the Jeep Gladiator will have a plug-in option, like a 4xe. I think that's going to be a challenge for Jeep also, because that adds weight, right? The batteries and electric motors, all that stuff adds weight to a truck. So payload is it's already payload sensitive. It has about 1,000 pounds of payload. So
and they are doing a 4xe version, right? They've announced that they're doing a 4xe version.
So we'll have to wait and see. But right now, Gladiator is struggling. It's a little bit overpriced, like we said, and customers, the sales are going down.
Do you think the 4xe is enough to bring back the sales of the Gladiator?
I don't know.
I doubt
because
it.
The price is going to go up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because 4xe is not free.
Well, you get that $7,500 federal tax credit, so it does lower the price. But what the manufacturers, of course, have been doing is they've been not taking the $7,500 tax credit and subtracting it from the MSRP. They've been adding that $7,500 to the MSRP and then subtracting it.
Yes.
So it's not actually helping with the price part of it. I don't know if a 4xe would be enough to get me to go get a Gladiator, especially if it was still $60,000+.
So every time I've driven a 4xe,
yeah.
And by the way, they're pushing it like crazy on the Wranglers, right?
Yeah, and for those of you who don't know, that's the plug-in hybrid version.
It can run a very limited distance.
25 miles, give or take.
21 to 25 miles on electricity alone.
What, like a 20-kilowatt-hour battery somewhere in that range?
Yeah, maybe slightly smaller than that. I don't know.
17, maybe?
I don't remember the exact spec. But I've enjoyed it every time I've driven the Wrangler 4xe.
And you see a lot of them. They're everywhere.
It's smooth. Yeah, it's smooth. It's quiet. If you want to even, you know, you and Nathan and Tommy took it off-road, right?
Yeah, we took it up
Redcone.
We took it up Redcone.
Yes.
We did drain the battery.
Yes, within 4 miles
or
something.
We did because we were going straight up. But you can, there's some clever features. There's a little button where you can have the engine charge the battery to some extent.
And save it for later.
And save it for later. So if you want to sneak in home. sneak into
late
your house
at night
without waking up the neighbors or your wife or your girlfriend or your boyfriend. For whatever reason, let's say you're being courteous, you can certainly do that. It's just cool tech, dude. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. And but it has to be priced right, right? It has to be available on more basic versions of the Gladiator to be successful.
Yeah, and they're doing it also on the Jeep Gladiator, and they were kind of early, and which is hard to believe for Stellantis. They were kind of early on that trend, and so when people decided that electric vehicles were coming on too fast. And they kind of took a step back and decided that they wanted hybrids. They were right there with the plug-in hybrid, so I got to commend them for that. And I know a lot of people who have brought a 4xe, and they seem very happy with it. So
So
maybe a 4xe Gladiator
will turn things around.
Yeah, but it certainly won't get the headlines that a 392 would.
Yeah.
All right, what's next?
So heavy-duty trucks.
Yeah.
We talked about the lack of the Tundra hybrid inverter system. Uh-huh.
Yeah, sure.
This inverter system doesn't exist in heavy-duty trucks.
You would think that the bigger the tool, the more power.
Yes. So heavy-duty trucks are job site trucks, right? They're contractor vehicles, people who do all kinds of work, mowing lawns, plumbers, carpenters, you name it, it does it. And no high-powered inverter systems in these trucks.
I wonder why that is. Because, you know, Ford has it, right?
In their F-150.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of the ones who kind of pioneered it. And so,
I brought up a picture. This is an image of the update to the Super Duty that we created ourselves.
Yeah.
This is a rendering. Ford hasn't announced this. Because we had some information that they're expanding production to Canada of the Super Duty. And maybe even doing a hybrid or an electrified version of the Super Duty.
Yeah, I can't think of a better generator for a battery than a diesel engine. I mean,
even a big V8.
Yeah, they get their torque down low, so it doesn't have to run very quickly. Diesels are known for running forever, so you could just keep them running and running. And so it would seem like you could put a big battery in a Super Duty because there's room for it.
And weight, you have the capability, capacity
the weight,
to do it.
It may not cut into payload critically
that much.
And then you would have all this power that you could use for whatever you wanted to use it for.
Run your job sites, everything.
Run a very, very big, big food truck.
I think whoever is the first to do this.
Is going to be first mover advantage.
Yeah. I don't know if Ram Cummins next year will do it or if Ford will do it in a year and a half. Or GM, but whoever will do it first will sell a lot of trucks.
Yeah, and I feel like this is all negative because we're all like, why aren't you doing this? But it's an opportunity, right? Let's look at the glass being half full and not half empty. And so whoever jumps on this trend, I think, is going to reap the benefits of it. And that's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to kind of look at what we see as the trucking landscape and where there are holes that need to be filled. And the next one that I see, Andre, is one that I think Ram was going to fill because we went to the unveiling of the Ram Rev concept, and it blew my mind, dude. That video just blew my mind. Can you believe all the innovation that they put in that thing?
It was insane, and Ram was so nice.
Such a good-looking truck.
Yeah, we had access to the truck. We saw it. We did video with it. It was really amazing.
So let's talk about the innovation. So the Ram Rev concept, this was the one that they unveiled.
Not the production truck.
Not the concept. They unveiled it in Vegas, and they gave us early access to it. So first, the design is spectacular. I love that kind of Coke bottle shape. I love the swept-back look of the truck. So it's kind of a sport truck design. It's got big Ram. If you're not watching this on our vodcast, video podcast, where it's behind us, it's got Ram across the front with this kind of integrated headlight design. And the first cool thing about it was it had a pass-through because it's got a skateboard design, right? The batteries on the bottom. So you could pass through the frunk to the passenger compartment, which I thought was super clever.
Long items like maybe lumber.
Yeah.
All the way inside the vehicle. Like Bollinger had a concept for this as well. Right?
Seems really smart.
Also mid-gate. So it was like Silverado EV or Avalanche. Mid-gate. Fell down. Also, that midsection, because the cab was larger, had the third row of seats.
Yeah, it had these like almost jump seats.
Yeah, little jump seats.
Jump seats behind the second row, which would fold up. A bed extender. I mean, like Ram threw the kitchen sink at this in terms of design and functionality. It was a stunner.
And they got a salivating over it.
They did get a salivating.
And then what happened?
And then they failed to incorporate any of it. I mean, any of it, from a design, from a utility, from there was an iPad, right, that was also there that kind of floated around so you could passenger or the driver could use it.
Yeah.
And none of that design. How about those drink holders in the frunk? Show the little like cup holders. They put cup holders in the frunk. How clever is that? Talk about tailgating. You could frunk it.
Front gate.
Yeah. Somebody really spent a lot of time and effort in both design, and then they showed the real production version, and it was a traditional Ram with a battery, and it was so disappointing. Ram, Stellantis, Carlos, you've got this incredible team of people that just, and I'm sure maybe this truck would cost $150,000, but I would line up to buy it. I really would. It's the first truck that like took what an electric truck could be and utilize
and maximize
and
the
maximized
potential.
It. And just, you know, just to show this and then just stick a battery in a traditional Ram.
There you go.
Yeah, that's, I would say this out of all these, that's the biggest missed opportunity.
Well, maybe
because I fell in love with the truck. Maybe it clicked both intellectually and
emotionally,
and then it never. Well, and I understand concepts, you know, but we've lived through a time where concepts have gone
become reality.
Yeah. You could pick up, you know, from Stinger to
FJ Cruiser.
Yeah,
to Evoque, Range Rover Evoque.
Yeah, that you know, basically when you show them, that's what you're going to build, no matter how crazy. And this was the exact opposite. This was like maybe in the 50s where they showed the car of the future. And then, of course,
and it never will come.
Yeah, they came back with giant tail fins, right?
Yes.
Anyway, but this is all doable. All of this is doable.
Well, maybe if we're in business 10 years from now, maybe we'll be driving this Ram Rev.
If Carlos Tavares was looking, you know, over the company concepts, this is the one that he should, you know, pick as the winner chicken dinner and actually build it. All right, what's next? The Ram. Oh, sorry, Rivian. Rivian Camp Kitchen. What happened?
Yeah, where's the kitchen?
Yeah, what happened? Rivian, what happened to the camp kitchen? What a great idea. Everybody I knew who bought a Rivian did so because they wanted the camp kitchen. They were like, what a great idea. I can go camping and I can cook.
I don't get it myself because I saw it. It's cool. But it was hugely expensive, Roman.
It was 5,000?
Like $5,000 for a kitchen that's mobile. Okay, I can buy my own hot plate.
Are you saying it's a moonshot?
I don't know. I think it was a little bit like showy and not realistic. And it didn't really come to fruition. Maybe it will still come, but... But you're right. People were excited by this.
So if you don't know what a camp kitchen is, the Rivian, of course, has this pass-through between the bed and the second row. And then you could put skis in there, clever design.
Bags, whatever,
that you don't want to get wet in the bed if you don't have room for it in, let's say, the cab. And they took that space and they created this like slide-out full camp kitchen with, you know, water and
drawers.
And cooking top, what a great idea. And it was, you know, what happened, I think, Andre, was Musk kind of pioneered this, right, where you put something out there that is so crazy and so cool that people just fall in love with it because it captures their imagination. And this is exactly what happened with the camp kitchen. And it's a dangerous thing to do because if you put it out there and then you don't provide it, it's the thing that's caught people's... It's like when you fall in love with something and somebody takes it away. The best example would be I used to be a realtor, and sometimes you'd show somebody a house, and you could just see that they fell in love with it. They'd be like, okay, the playground equipment's going to go in the backyard in this corner. You know, little Molly's going to get this bedroom. And then for whatever reason, you know, financing fell through. Somebody else paid more. They lose that house. And it's
heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking. And I'm not saying it's that strong of an emotion with the camp kitchen, but in some ways it is because it says to the world out there that, you know, we've got the brain power and the engineering power to come up with this concept, but we don't have the engineering and prowess to actually fulfill
it. Deliver it.
Yeah. And then, of course, the reason becomes it's too expensive or it doesn't function, yada, yada, yada.
Or other priorities may have come up or something.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. The fact is you throw it out there and now you're disappointing your customers to some extent.
And finally,
the last one, and we just did this. Tell them what we just did with, well, you've got the Tacoma there, but we also did this with our Ranger.
So yeah, so our friends at GFC, Go Fast Campers, so we were fortunate enough to be one of the first, if not the first, new Tacoma 2024 with a GFC camper. And why is it—
Andre, go fast.
Go fast. Because it's every Go Fast Camper, it kind of follows the lines of a truck, right? So if it tapers from the bed to the cab, or if there's an angle here or there, everyone is custom built for that truck, basically. So when you have a Ford Ranger, for example, the camper itself may be a little bit different than a Tacoma. So just recently, just a week ago, we put our camper on our Ranger Raptor. So now our Ranger Raptor has a little house on top of it.
Yeah, and you know, 10 years ago, when I remember when I went to the Jeep dealership here in Boulder, and you could buy a Wrangler, and then they'd be like, you know, we've got this whole department where if you want us to lift it, we can make it much more. Because remember that back then, like the, and still today, the Rubicon had like red shocks. And then the manufacturers figured out, you know what, we can partner with Fox or King or
Milstein or whatever.
Or Multimatic, right?
Yeah.
And we can actually incorporate this into the truck so you could roll it into your loan. And then we can get much more functionality, utility, and you know, much better shock absorbers.
And we could charge more.
And we could charge more. And then same thing with like the Bronco Everglades, right, that we have with the Warren winch that now lives on the thing from the factory.
And the snorkel.
And the snorkel. So yeah, the manufacturers were just leaving a lot of money on the table for the dealers to come and then basically upgrade the truck and then charge, you know, an arm and a leg for it. And then the other problem, of course, is when you do that, you can't roll it into the loan. You can't finance it. And, of course, it's not safety tested. So, you know, when you stick a, let's say, you know, some aftermarket bumper on your truck, which is fine, you are definitely compromising its crashworthiness.
Yeah,
in a lot of different ways.
So where, what are we getting at?
Why don't they partner with with Go Fast?
Yeah,
and provide this from the factory? Why can't you get a camper?
Or at least a dealer level.
Yeah,
right?
I know. I'd go from the factory. Okay, kind of like GM partnered with AEB, right?
Yeah, American Expedition Vehicles.
Right, where
yeah,
they did the Bison.
Yes.
Why can't that include a camper? There's so many people who love these campers because let's face it, it becomes then the ultimate overlanding rig, and you could color match it. You know what I mean?
You could do any number of things.
You
yes,
could, you know, like the new one that we just put on has lights.
Lights,
but,
yeah,
but,
different
but all that would integrate as opposed to us having to figure out how to turn the lights on or plug them into the little electrical ports. You could actually have a button for it. There's just so much more you could do if they designed the vehicle with the camper in mind. And this is just a midsize truck. How about if you like worked with four-wheel campers? Like
for a full size or heavy duty.
For a heavy duty or yeah, a full size truck yeah, where you actually sell, you know. And I know there's a giant camper industry, but I don't know why the manufacturers aren't dipping their, you know, big toe in that pond.
Maybe it's coming because, you know, Toyota has a program where, you know, you could buy like awnings and add other accessories through your dealer.
Maybe the manufacturers are like too busy with their core competency.
Maybe that's it, yes.
Which is replacing engines. Oh, that was a low blow, Andre.
But, oh.
Ooh, sorry, Toyota.
No, but
low blow.
But you know what? Somebody like Rivian could do it. You know, somebody new, like a new company that's coming online.
Well, there was a camper that was supposed to match the Tesla.
I've never seen it.
So Tesla sold this like janky, and you can get it for the Cybertruck.
There's a tent.
It's like a janky tent,
yeah,
right? And then people bought it, and they were like,
disappointed by it.
Yeah, first of all, the truck didn't have any leveling, which you could because it had air. I think, did they add the leveling to it?
I think it came later. Yes.
Yeah, but you, like you would roll down the side of the truck if you parked it on anything that wasn't level, which of course is everything off road. And then the thing wasn't very well designed, so it just looked like this giant bulbous silver attachment.
Yeah, it didn't match the expectation, right?
No.
So maybe a new company could do something more clever than that. So
well, that's the list, dude.
Maybe Scout. You know, Scout is coming out.
Yeah.
Maybe Scout can build a camper into it.
Well, they just partnered with Rivian, so I think they're very, not Scout, but Volkswagen,
yes,
but they're working
yes,
on, you know, the electronics of the vehicle.
Yeah.
But maybe this is something that's low-lying fruit because, like, changing the electronic architecture of how you have all those little computers talk to each other seems like a very difficult thing, worth billions, at least according to how much Volkswagen is paying Rivian. Whereas if you put a camper on the truck, it may just be, you know, hundreds of thousands. So
yeah,
that's a free one there for any manufacturer that wants to go out and see if that they can actually build an Overlander straight from the factory. Because let's face it, without the little camper, all you have is a truck with a bed.
There you go.
And no place, no way to cover it. All right, guys.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. Remember, where should they go if you want to see what truck you bought?
OldTFL.com or also TFLtruck.com.
I'm showing it right here.
OldTFL.com.
And yeah, you'll be surprised because this was certainly something out of our comfort zone, but I'm super excited. All right, thanks for watching, guys. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Ciao. Bye.